Thank you for joining us today for another podcast from Flushing Community Church. We are real people seeking to understand the truth revealed in God's Word. You can join us every Sunday at our place of gathering in Flushing, Michigan. Find out more by visiting flushingcommunity.org.
Today we're going to be looking at how the light has a certain attraction value to us and how we're attracted to that light, as Steve has said, and attracted toward that vacancy light that he experienced as a child. Next week, Pastor Joel's even going to share with us about how the light lives within us and how that light changes us from the inside. Have you ever noticed that there's really just one of two realities with light? I mean, light's an interesting thing. But usually there's one of two reactions that we have toward light. We're either drawn to it and attracted to it, or we run from it and we're kind of repelled from it. I mean, you look in nature and it kind of operates that way, right? There are some creatures who are just naturally attracted to the light. And you know this because you'll notice if you have a little hole in your screen and you have your windows open at night in the middle of the summer, all those bugs are trying to get into your house, right? I hate June beetles. They're totally harmless, but they're big and nasty looking. And they just, what do? They just sit there and pound on your windows all night long, right? Because they're trying to get into your house in the summer. Certain bugs are repelled by the light, and they like the darkness. So when you turn on a light switch, some of them scatter. They want to get away from the light. And it's kind of like that with us as well. Some of us are kind of daytime people, rather. We like the light. We got to have all the lights on in our house all the time, just because you never know when you might walk back into a room, right? We have to have light. Then there's those of us that I kind of prefer darkness sometimes. I like all the lights off in my house. I'm perfectly content to sit in a dark house. That feels very warm and welcoming to me. Come to my porch and all the lights are off, I'm probably home. We're all different. We're all unique. We're all trying to love each other, those of us who love lights on, those who don't. And yet, that's what we're going to be talking about today, is that attractive value of light and how it sometimes lures us to it and calls us to it, and at other times, we just want to run the other way. This summer, my family did something that it hasn't done in a long, long time. When I say my family, I mean the Bate clan. And it's rare that we all get together for vacation purposes. I think the last time we probably vacationed together was 11 years ago. I know Sutton wasn't born yet. And so this summer we got together for just under a week of vacationing at a cabin down on the Indiana-Michigan border. It was a fun week, a lot of time on the water, which was very refreshing and good. There was one night where we decided we were going to do a bonfire. It turned out to be a campfire of four. No one else really joined or felt the value of that, but my father and I, my brother, we got a campfire started. Corbin was sitting out there with us, and we're talking, and it's just, I mean, it was beautiful. The sun had just set. It was just that time of night where the light was still a little bit bright, but it was dark all around the house that we were at. And I'm leaning back in my chair. I'm just getting ready just to kind of rest my head. And when I looked up, I saw something that really caught my attention. Now, you got to know that while we were out there talking about three cabins down, about three houses down, there was a family who thought it was the 4th of July. This was the end of July, near the 1st of August, but they had a barrage of fireworks. They were lighting bottle rockets over the lake. They were doing all kinds of crazy things. So it wasn't a quiet campfire. It was quite active. But when I just put my head back and was getting ready just to close my eyes and just kind of rest them just for a moment, of an entire day of being out in the sun, I just wanted to close my eyes, put my head back, crackling fire, my dad, my brother, my son sitting next to me, went out of absolutely nowhere. I mean, it caught me way off guard. This bright light went right over my head. I mean, it was huge. It was bigger than any bottle rocket I could have imagined. As a matter of fact, it was so big, my only thought was, it must have almost hit the tree. It was huge. But it made no sound. I mean, I kept waiting for the explosion. I mean, it looked like a missile of some kind. You know, I was hearing all these bottle rockets thinking, that was the coolest firework I've ever seen. And Corbin says, I saw that last night. I told you I saw this big ball of fire up in the sky. And I don't listen to half of what Corbin tells me he sees. But I saw it myself. And I went, what was that? Not a sound. And it looked like a comet was about ready to hit Lake George. I could not believe it. A little bit of investigation, I found out that what I saw over me was not a UFO. It was not a comet. It was what's called the ISS. Does anyone know what the ISS stands for? Some of you are coming up with acronyms you cannot say out loud in church. The International Space Station had just flown over our heads. And what happens is I discovered this, that you can actually go on NASA's website and they'll tell you, based on where you live, when the International Space Station will fly over your home. Now, if it flies over at night, it's just going to be like a fast-moving airplane. Maybe you've seen a light in the night before that just kind of travels this fast. It really only stays in your horizon typically less than 2 minutes, sometimes even less, seconds. It just depends on kind of where it's at in the atmosphere. But there are these moments when, if it's right around dusk, where the sun has set on your home, but it hasn't quite set where the International Space Station is above you, that it's still reflecting the powerful rays of the sun to such a degree that it looks like a ball of fire going over your head. It is amazing. The other night we were traveling somewhere, we were on Corona Road, and Tammy went, what was that? I bet it was the International Space Station, I told her. Sounded all knowledgeable and everything. Now the interesting thing is all of you are going to go home and Google this and find out that I'm absolutely wrong, right? And I'm going to get 15 emails and texts this week about how I'm off. But that's what I had discovered. That's what, you know, credible sources from the government had told me when I called to report the UFO. Now, that light caught me off guard. I was ready for the darkness of night and rest and everything that comes with that. But when all of a sudden, out of nowhere, a ball of fire that large, it has a way of like getting your attention. And you're just going to have to trust me. It was pretty darn cool. Not quite as cool as Indiana beating Kentucky last night, but it was pretty cool. And you knew that was going to work itself in somehow. If you don't know, don't worry about it. Okay. No, I need to tell you. No. Indiana beat the number one team in basketball last night. And Mike LaCroix, I know that Tom Crean coached for Michigan State, all right? You don't have to tell me again. All you Michigan State people, you know Tom Crean, your basketball coach, he got his start at Michigan State. I know, I'm just kidding you. All right. I'm really excited. I cried like a baby watching that game. Okay. That has nothing to do with God's light. Get back on track. All right. Light has a way of getting our attention. It has a way of kind of shocking us back into reality at times. You know, businesses have used light all the time to kind of get your attention to who they are, right? We, as parents, use light to get our kids' attention. You know, 6:20 in the morning, lights come on, it's time to get up. You know, you got to use light to wake up those who slumber in our house. Businesses use the flashing lights now, open, or sale. They want you to know something's going on inside that you need to come check out. Hotels have used lights for years to draw attention to whether or not they have room for you or not, what price they have for their rooms, which is never that price, because there's only one room in the hotel for $29.99 and somebody's in it, the manager, right? So we use light, and we understand that light is used for attraction purposes. In the Christmas season, we often talk about lights. Many of us put lights on our houses and on trees and our shrubs. We even make up fake trees to put lights on in Christmas. I had bought some really cool automated reindeer, and then I listened to Pastor Steve's message a few weeks ago and had to return those because he made fun of lit reindeer. But the good news is I found a lit dog, so now I have a lit dog in my front yard. I think that's maybe a compromise of all of that. Because I have a real dog inside, maybe that works. If I had a real reindeer inside, maybe I could go with a lit reindeer in my yard. But since we do this at Christmas, we put up lights all over our homes. It's the one time of the year that I ask myself, why did we buy a two-story house? I'm up on a ladder and it's freezing cold, and I think I should put these up in October when it's nice and warm outside and I can't feel my fingers and I'm trying to put the little clips on the, you know, on the eaves. We've all done this. This is crazy stuff that we do. But we light up our homes. We put beautiful trees in our homes and we talk about light, and we do it so frequently we don't even know why. We don't even know why we put lights on trees anymore. And then there's the, you know, some people like the colored, some people like the white, and we get into this debate. Now the lights around people's houses actually move and have different colors in them, flashing all over the place. Why do we use light? You know, it started because there was a light in the sky 2,000 years ago that caught the attention of some very wise people. There was a baby born in a manger who the prophets talked about being the light of the world. And that baby grew to be a wonderful man who listened to the voice of his heavenly Father and called himself the light of the world. And we celebrate that by doing these kind of crazy things. Putting lights on our houses. Lights on the trees. But sometimes I think we forget why. There was this interesting group of men. Some say they were scientists, some think doctors or theologians, who knows. This group of men, but they had their attention on the celestial sights of the night sky. And they discovered a star. It probably didn't even require instrumentation to discover it. They look up and they see a beautiful, amazing star. Some people believe it was the convergence of several planets on one. I don't know and don't care. God put a bright light into the sky in the most powerful way, and it got these men's attention, and it changed their lives. It is believed that these men were likely astrologers because the star was used to draw them. It's also believed that they probably came from the land of Persia. They say they're from the east. They don't identify their homeland. But we're guessing from the area of Persia, and there's good reason to believe that. Do you remember years and years, hundreds of years before this time of when Jesus arrived, the people of Israel, many of them were exiled to Persia, to Babylonia and places like that. With them went their scriptures. What went with them was their holy words. And so it's very possible that the scriptures of the Hebrews had found residence also with some of these Persian theologians. And so we find that these magi, these wise men, these astrologers are looking into the sky, seeing this bright light and trying to understand what it means. And I believe that quite easily they could have looked through a lot of different holy words. But they discover in the Hebrew writings these words from Numbers chapter 24. I see him, but not now. I behold him, but not near. A star will come out of Jacob. A scepter will rise out of Israel. These words would have easily been with Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego when they were in exile in Persia. And it's very possible to believe that these wise men had held on to these words and used them to understand what this star could have meant. Whatever the case, these men, however many of them there were, decided that this was a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. A star of this magnitude could have meant the arrival of a new king for the land of Israel. This is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, and they did not want to miss it. Have you ever had a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity? Have you ever had an opportunity to do something or experience something, and you know, this is my opportunity to do this, and you take it, and you're so excited that you did? I've had both. I've had opportunities like that, and I've taken them, and I've not. When I was a high schooler, I had the opportunity to go to St. Vincent Island with a group of people from Campus Life. I was really involved with Youth for Christ growing up. And there was a group of people going over there, and it sounded really cool to do a mission trip. I'd never been on one before. And it was too expensive, and I was just afraid of all that would go into it. And so I said no. And man, have I regretted that one. That would have been an awesome experience to go on that trip. I also had some other opportunities. We lived in Grand Rapids when Gerald Ford passed away. How many of us are ever going to have the opportunity to go and pay your respects to a president of the United States? I thought that was a pretty awesome opportunity. So I grabbed my, at that point, 65-year-old father-in-law, 68-year-old father-in-law, and we went and we stood in line for 7 hours, something like that, back and forth, until that one moment when we got ushered into the room where this casket was and 5 armed guards standing. It was amazing. I'm so glad I did. And Gene and I talk about it frequently. It's just one of those cool things that we got to do together. Tammy called me at 4 in the morning and said, "What are you doing with my father out this late? Get home," right? But it was so cool to do that. Once in a lifetime opportunities. When they come, we got to grab a hold of them. And these magi recognized this as an opportunity. They also knew that they were very far away from the people of Israel. Some 1,500 miles. It could take over a year and a half to travel. They knew this. They counted the cost. They knew that it was an incredibly dangerous excursion. And yet they went anyways. Let's pick up in Matthew chapter 2. This is where the story of the Magi is recorded for us. Matthew chapter 2. After Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea, during the time of King Herod, Magi from the east came to Jerusalem and they asked, "Where is the one who's been born King of the Jews? We saw his star in the east and have come to worship him." Now, I don't know if you're like me. I want to stop right here. I don't know if you're like me, but I've had some questions even about just these two verses. First of all, if they're from the east and they saw the star in the east, what made them go west? Anyone ever stop to think about that? Doesn't that seem a little bizarre to you? I did a little research because this was troubling to me. How can I explain to you that these men are coming from the east, the star is in the east, yet they find themselves traveling 1,500 miles to the west? So I did a little poking around, and there's a man, Jason Lyle, who shed some light on this for me, quite honestly. He writes for Answers in Genesis, which is a great organization, and he's got a doctorate in astrophysics, and I don't even know what that really means, so I'm trusting that is really huge. I know it is. I'm being silly. That's huge. He understands a lot of this celestial stuff. He says these words, "Recall that the Bible does not say that the star guided the Magi to Jerusalem, though it may have. We only know for certain that it went before them to Bethlehem," which is really the next part of the story. So, it's possible that the star initially acted only as a sign rather than a guide. The Magi might have just headed to Jerusalem only because this would seem as the most logical place to begin their search for the King of the Jews, the center of all of Israel. So they see this incredible star. They discover in Numbers 24 this prophecy that a star will rise up out of Israel to be the new king of these people. And they naturally say, "We got to pack our bags and let's start in Jerusalem." Doesn't that make sense? We've got this picture traditionally that the star is sitting over Bethlehem all this time and the Magi keep following the star. I think the star maybe had two purposes. The first purpose was like that big ball of fire over my campfire, was to kind of get their attention. The first purpose was to attract them to something bigger and better that they had never known before. I think the star stood out in the east as a sign that there was something unique and special taking place. And they wanted to go discover that. And so they traveled the opposite direction, but to the land that they knew that would lead them to where this king would be born. This really does make sense to me. Now, can you imagine the commotion when these pagan magi come into Jerusalem and they start asking for where the birthplace of the King of the Jews is? Among those totally freaking out is the current King of the Jews, Herod. He is absolutely scared by what he's hearing. Let's pick up the reading in verse 3. "When Herod heard this, he was disturbed," which is a light statement, "and all of Jerusalem with him. When he had called together all the people's chief priests and teachers of the law, he asked them where the Christ was to be born. In Bethlehem in Judea, they replied, for this is what the prophet Micah has written, 'But you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means the least among the rulers of Judah, for out of you will come a ruler who will be the shepherd of my people.'" Now, the prophet Micah would have been written, these words would have been written after Daniel had been in Persia, so these would not have been words that the Magi would have had access to. All they knew was that out of Israel there would be a king, but these words shed light on specifically where this king would be born. Now, Herod called the Magi together secretly, found out from them the exact time the star had appeared in the sky. He sent them to Bethlehem and said, "Go and make careful search for the child. As soon as you find him, report to me so that I too may go and worship him." And after they had heard the king, they went on their way, and the star they had seen in the east went ahead of them until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they were overjoyed. The star that had been in the east, this brilliant bright light, now goes directly 5 miles south of Jerusalem. This star that had been pointing east is now revealing the exact location of where the Christ child is. Bethlehem is a small little village on a very treacherous trail outside of Jerusalem. You've got to travel 5 miles south and a slight bit west to get there. And that star, that's where we learn that the star leads the way. The second purpose of that star, to guide them to the very specific location. It's kind of the world's first GPS tracking device. It put them right where they needed to be. Now, I know God uses scientific law to often accomplish His purposes. But I also think that every once in a while, I see Him bending the rules, and I think this is one of those moments where He caused that star to move and to shine so brightly over this home. We call it miracles. Sometimes God just cannot be confined by science. I think science is great, and I think science teaches us a lot. But in this moment, I believe God was up to something quite special and unique. Now, traditionally, the Magi are placed at the side of the manger, gazing at the baby, offering him presents, and sitting there in silence, right? A couple of them kneeling, one of them standing, holding their gifts. That's how we've always seen the Magi. Who knows? You know, quite honestly, a lot of people believe that the baby would have been about 2 years old because they estimate if the star arose when Jesus was born, it would take a couple of years to make that trip. I don't know. Part of me wants to think that maybe the star was put in the sky 2 years before Jesus was born. Who's to say God wouldn't have done that? Can you imagine that the star had been in the sky for 15 months already before the angel appeared to Mary? Isn't that kind of cool to kind of see God potentially orchestrating all of this together with such finesse that the trip of the Magi began before the Immaculate Conception even took place? But see, that's the kind of God I serve. I serve a God who I believe can do those kinds of things if He so chooses. So whether or not the Magi went and they found the baby in the manger, or whether they found a very active 2-year-old running around the house and Mary pulling her hair out, I really don't know. We're really not told those specifics. But I do know this. God used light in a very specific way to guide and direct these men right to where the baby was. Now, as it relates to vacancy and all of these things and where the baby is, I think Doug O'Brien had a really cool observation Pastor Steve shared with me this just last night, as a matter of fact. It kind of goes really well with the imagery that we have on the platform today. Doug said these words, and I'm paraphrasing, so Doug, if I'm off a little bit, I'm sorry about that. We'll cover the copyright part after the service. If there had been no vacancy in the inn, there would have been no room for the shepherds and the wise men to come and worship. In other words, if there had been room for Jesus to be born in a comfortable place, there wouldn't have been room for all of the attention to be drawn to Him, for all the light to shine down on Him. But because there was no vacancy in the inn, Jesus was born in a place that was open. Open for all to come. Open for all to come in and see and to gaze. So yeah, I don't know if the Magi came to a house like we live in or if they came to a stable. But I do know this, that the minute Jesus was born, the second Jesus was born, the doors were open. And the vacancy light was on. And there is room and always will be room for us to come and stand or come and kneel and gaze at that manger and worship this child to worship this man who had been born, this man who left his comfortable place in heaven to come down and live with us, among us, to become God incarnate and allow us to see how God operates and lives. I kind of wish the story ended right here. I kind of wish that the story would end with the Magi coming and everybody loving on each other and then going home. But friends, the story doesn't end there. You remember that Herod asked that they would come back to report where the child was so he could go worship him as well. His intentions were not to go worship Jesus. His intentions were to go make Jesus extinct. And when the Magi were warned in the dream to go home a different way, Herod got really angry. This is a man that's already killed wives. He's already killed brothers. He already put to death his parents. This man is twisted. When it comes to power and authority, once he's got it, he does not want to let it go. So the idea of a new king being born is so threatening and so fearful that it puts him into a state of panic. And he orders to have every boy in Bethlehem, 2 years and younger, put to death, because that would work in accordance with when the Magi first saw the star appear. Can you imagine being a mom, ladies, of a young boy who was put to death because Jesus had been born in your town and that was the only reason? Now, thankfully, Bethlehem was a small village. I hope and pray that there were no boys 2 years and under in Bethlehem. We know that's not true. And we also know that we like to make a big number about that. And quite frankly, I hope it was just a small number. But you know what? Any number is too big for me to really understand and comprehend. It's a tough part of the story. Sometimes light attracts. And sometimes light repels. Just like we talked about with the bugs. Sometimes light attracts, like it did the Magi. And sometimes when that light falls, it repels us, like it did with Herod. The Magi, they were seekers. They were probably not followers of the God of Abraham and Jacob. They likely were just men who have followed many gods in their lifetime. But they were smart enough to understand that the signs of the times were pointing them to something very special. They wanted to understand the purpose of this star, this amazing light, and they were willing to dedicate 4 years of traveling, round trip, to experience what this light meant. That level of sacrifice, that's the heartbeat of worshiping God. So Randy, the slide before kind of makes this point for me. The light attracted the true seekers into deep worship. I hope that's us. I hope that's us, that the light that God offers us attracts us into deeper things of worshiping Him. It will make us uncomfortable. It will cause us great sacrifice. But I hope that when the light of God falls on us, that we are so attracted and we want to embrace it, like the Magi did. I found it interesting that these astrologers were held in strong contempt by most Jews. They didn't get them, they didn't understand them, and just like the shepherds who we talked about last week, they were kind of outcasts. They weren't really a part of the in crowd, and yet that's the people. Those are the ones that God reveals the arrival of Christ to. Blows my mind away how God works. We think it's one way, and then it's the minute we got that figured out, He says, I don't work quite that way. We need to stay on our toes, embracing the things of God. Now, sometimes, as I've already said, the light repels. And in the case of Herod, the light repelled Herod and sparked his fear and his fury. When Herod felt threatened by what was going on around him, something came alive in him that was dark and sinister and evil. And he wanted to run away from the light. He did not want to embrace the Messiah in any way. The light caused him to fear his own existence. And in doing so, caused him to do incredible evil things. Now, we're not as bad as Herod, right? We're not killing people, right? But too often I am afraid that as believers in our culture and in the society in which we live, when the light comes, we run. When the light comes and reveals stuff to us, we say, no, I don't want to hear that. And we run. And we want to ignore God and we want to ignore His voice and we run. Friends, when the light comes, we need to be people who run to it, not away from it. It will be more difficult and more challenging, I know. That's why we need each other. But when the light of Christ comes, I want it to attract us to His presence and cause us to be a people who embrace it in that way. John, I quoted from chapter 1 already, and chapter 3 says, and I believe Julie read this last week, the light has come into the world, but men loved the darkness instead of the light because their deeds were evil. Everyone who does evil hates the light and will not come into the light for fear that his deeds will be exposed. Isn't that our fear? Isn't that really our fear? That if we come into the light, everyone's going to see us for who we really are? So we'd rather stay in the darkness than to allow others to see who we are. But he goes on to say, whoever lives by the truth comes into the light so that it may be seen plainly that what he has been done through God. Jesus himself said it in Matthew chapter 5. He's even talking about us now. You are the light of the world. Jesus says, a city on a hill cannot be hidden, neither do people light a lamp and then put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on a stand so that it gives light to everyone in the house. So in the same way, let your light shine before men that they may see your good deeds and praise your Father in heaven. You know, we are not the light. We are not the light. We are not the sun. We are not the stars. You know what we are? The best analogy I can think of this. We are the moon. Our job is to reflect the light of Christ into a very dark world. Our job is to put ourselves in position so that we can see all of God's Son, Jesus, and reflect that right back down to a part of our world, to our neighborhood, to our workplaces, to our family, in a dark place, and allow them to see the power of God's light. It's hard for us to imagine as simple people that when we see the moon at night, it's not the light of the moon. It's really just the light of the sun reflecting off of the moon. And that's what God has called us to be, people of light, reflecting God's light into our world. I hope and pray that when the light comes this holiday season, and maybe it's shining on you now, that it will reveal things to you that you have never noticed before, and that you will embrace it in such a way with a love and an attraction that you just are desiring it so much and not choosing to run away from it and continue to hide in darkness. That puts us on really shaky ground when we live that way. Let's be people who live in the light that God offers us. Would you pray with me? God of all light, God who has given us light, who has created light, would you let your light shine on us today? Just as you led your people Israel out of Egypt, and you did so with a cloud by day and a big pillar of fire at night, I pray that you would guide us into that kind of fire and light. Would you reveal yourself to us? Would you show us who and where we need to be? Would you help us live in your light and embrace your light, be attracted to your light, worship in your light, engage in your light, allow your light to expose us for who we are, and allow that light to change us. May your light transform us into who you wanted us to be from the very beginning, before sin wrecked us. I pray that as we bring our service to a close today, God, that you will speak so clearly into our hearts today that we would respond. That we would respond in a way that only we know how as your children and followers. Call us to your light. Help us to engage your light. May this Christmas season not be filled with the traditions of our day, but may it be filled with your light. I want to challenge you today, my friends, to respond to God's light however you feel God challenging you to do so. In our church, we have a place of prayer up front. We've got new pads for your elbows. It's a very comfortable place to pray. I'd encourage you, if you feel led that you would like to seek God up here, that you can do that. That's okay. Maybe you want to just focus on God right where you are, seated, and that's perfectly acceptable as well. But do not let this moment of a lifetime pass you by to say yes to the light of Christ. Embrace the light that God is offering you today. That's my challenge for you. Let's embrace all that He has for us.
Thanks for spending these minutes with us at Flushing Community Church. If you would like to speak with someone regarding today's message, please contact our office at 810-732-0282 or visit flushingcommunity.org.